This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Federal News Radio. This is Derek Dortch on Fed Access. We thank you for coming by the show. Always welcome to have you on here. We're going to have an interesting show today. We're going to be talking about what's been going on in Kenya and with Al-Shabaab, a terrorist organization. Some people are hearing about it for the first time, but Al-Shabaab is not a new organization. They've been around for quite some time. And today we're going to get some analysis about this organization, what they did in Kenya, and then what they may possibly do in the future. What is the dynamics of this terrorist organization? Is this a growth pattern? Is this a subsidiary of Al-Qaeda? Are we expecting other things to happen in the United States because Al-Shabaab supposedly has dynamics and people of interest in Minnesota and other areas? Today we're talking to Scott Stewart. He's the Vice President of Analysis at Stratfor. And Stratfor, we've had them on before. They are a geopolitical, a global private intelligence firm. They provide a number of analytical products to global 500 companies, to government agencies, and everyone else. And Scott also worked in the State Department. He was an investigator. He was a special agent working at a number of different embassies and provided regional security work. And he was a regional security officer in Guatemala and other places and has worked in a number of different terrorist investigations around the world. Scott, welcome to Fed Access.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Hey, Scott, you know, talk to us about Al-Shabaab. I know a lot of people are hearing about Al-Shabaab for the first time coming out of Somalia. The last time Somalia had really been in the news was with the piracy situations. That kind of calmed itself down. But Al-Shabaab, who is Al-Shabaab in terms of these the Kenya attacks at the mall in Nairobi? Who is this organization and what's the background on them?
Yeah, I think it's important. You know, there is this you know, new narrative now because of this attack and the publicity it's received. But it's very important to remember that Al-Shabaab is not some new entity. You know, really, they trace their beginnings all the way back to 2006. And before 2006 was some of the, you know, Islamist militant groups inside Somalia. But in 2006, we had the Islamic Courts Union take over power in Somalia. And they really were, you know, this Islamist militant organization. Because of that overthrow, we had the Ethiopian military come in and invade Somalia, pretty much prompted by the U.S. and some of its allies, and they deposed the Islamic Courts Union from power. In response to that, we had the youth faction, and Shabaab means youth, you know, in Arabic, and we had the youth faction of the Islamic Courts Union, or Al-Shabaab, begin this terrorist and insurgent campaign against the Ethiopian occupation of Somalia. And that's really where Al-Shabaab started growing and becoming you know, more widely known. Eventually, their campaign was somewhat successful. And you know, in 2009, in January 2009, we had the Ethiopians withdraw from Somalia. And at that time, Al-Shabaab flexed its muscle, took over a lot of territory, to include large sections of Mogadishu, the capital of Somalia itself. You know, the United States has been paying attention to Al-Shabaab and some of its linked organizations for many years now. You know, Islamic militancy in Somalia is not new. In fact, you know, we have links going all the way back to the Black Hawk Down incident, where we had, you know, these Somali jihadis working with Al-Qaeda to attack U.S. forces in Somalia. And the Americans have been chasing, you know, some of the individuals responsible for that incident, as well as the Nairobi and Dar es Salaam bombings in 1998 in Somalia since. And so we've had some U.S. drone strikes. We've had U.S. special operations strikes using helicopters, and we've even had some naval gunfire and cruise missile strikes in Somalia going against some of these jihadi targets. And indeed, we've had some successes, or the United States has had some successes in taking out key individuals associated with al-Shabaab and with al-Qaeda in East Africa. Now, 2 years ago, we had an invasion of Somalia by the UN mission in Somalia, or AMISOM, and a large portion of those troops are Kenyan. Under this AMISOM.
And Scott, to give some perspective, this invasion was to kind of build up the government of Somalia. I mean, especially now when we talked about a government that didn't have any true stability and did not really have it wasn't a functioning government in the way we would think about it. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, quite frankly, the government only controlled it at that point, a very small part of the capital and not much beyond there. The arrival of, the African troops from Burundi, Rwanda, Ethiopia, Uganda, and of course the Kenyans have really helped to, force al-Shabaab from the control that they had and has really helped establish enlarge the government's, area of control in Somalia. They've also, over the last 2 years, in 2012, they were able to push al-Shabaab out of Kismayo, one of the main ports in southern Somalia, and that was also a place that was, very valuable to al-Shabaab because they were kind of levying import taxes on everything coming through the port, to include some of, the illicit things and the smuggled items. So it was really a big cash cow from them.
So really, also, during these time periods, I mean, they were using Somalia as a dysfunctional country, but it was using it as basically a place to make a whole bunch of money for this, what we would designate as a terrorist organization.
Well, yeah, a terrorist organization and really an insurgent organization as well. They were fighting conventional battles against the government and against its backers. But really, over the last 2 years, we've seen a change there. We've seen, due to international pressure, we've seen Eritrea reduce the support that they have given to al-Shabaab. Eritrea has always been a rival with Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
And, with the Ethiopian, invasion of Somalia, that concerned the Eritreans. So they supported al-Shabaab as a tool to use against the Ethiopians as well. But due to international pressure, the Eritrean support is dwindling somewhat. But also this AMISOM offensive has served to kind of, wrest control of large portions of Somalia from al-Shabaab. And so what's happened is when al-Shabaab has tried to fight the Kenyans or the Ethiopians toe-to-toe, they've taken some pretty big losses. So what they've done is kind of gone back to the same tactics they used in 2007, where they kind of melted back into their militant hideouts in no man's land. And then fought really an insurgent and terrorist campaign against the foreign forces. At that time it was the Ethiopians, and now it's the AMISOM to include the Kenyans. What we really have is al-Shabaab going back to that model. It's important to understand that when you're forced to go into an insurgency mode from a conventional warfare mode, it really is an admission of weakness.
Mm-hmm.
and not strength. So al-Shabaab is quite weaker than they were in 2011, 2012, due to a number of factors, not only losing the territory and the funds that came in from places like Kismayo, some of the foreign support, but following some of the low-level bombings we saw in Kenya in 2012, and then we also had some threats to Western hotels in Kenya in 2012, we saw the Kenyans really start to clamp down on the al-Shabaab support network within Kenya itself. So we saw sanctions against companies that were affiliated with al-Shabaab. We've seen also, the Kenyans take control of many of the border towns on the Kenyan-Somali border that previously al-Shabaab had controlled. And we've also seen the Kenyans clamp down on this organization, Islamic Youth Organization, within Kenya that was very supportive of al-Shabaab. And indeed, they had sworn allegiance to al-Shabaab and its leader, Godane. you know, the Kenyans have been doing a lot to undermine the al-Shabaab position as well within Kenya and the support that can flow to the group. And so that's been hurting them economically. So the group's taken losses on the battlefield. They've taken economic losses. They're weaker than they were in 2011 and 2012.
We need to take a quick break. We are talking to Scott Stewart. He is the Vice President of Analysis, and he has been providing us a breakdown of who al-Shabaab is. They have been the terrorist organization, the insurgent organization that did these horrific attacks in Kenya at the mall, and we are trying to understand who they are and what this means for the future in terms of terrorism or insurgencies in Africa and even the impact on the United States. He's a Vice President of Analysis at Stratfor. You can find him at stratfor.com. And he's also an author of a book that we will talk about shortly that deals with travel security. But we'll get into that as we go later on in the show. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch. We'll be right back to continue this great conversation. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're listening, we have been talking about al-Shabaab. We have been trying to get an understanding of who this organization is and, you know, what their background is and why did they do what they just did in Kenya at the mall there. We're talking to Scott Stewart. He's the Vice President of Analysis at Stratfor, which is a private intelligence firm, geopolitical risk consulting and everything else. You can find them at stratfor.com, but they provide a heavy amount of analysis on a number of different world issues, and they do monitor things in Africa, terrorist attacks. They monitor things in Mexico and all different issues around the world. Scott was a former State Department investigator. He used to be the Deputy Regional Security Officer in Guatemala, and he's worked on a number of terrorist investigations around the world. Scott, you were giving us a breakdown of al-Shabaab. You know, as we look at it, and is the goal for now al-Shabaab, now that they have fallen back, they have taken these losses and they've lost ground in terms of their insurgency campaign, and now they have fallen back and mailed it back into the landscape and maybe the population. What can we expect now in terms of goals? Are they trying to do this Kenya attack in order to basically to change the minds of the Kenyan people, say, hey, it's not worth it to be involved in Somalia? What are they trying to go for?
Well, yeah, just to backtrack just one step beyond that, you know, we went into the break, we were talking about how they're weaker than they were before.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important for your listeners to understand that, it takes less resources and men and materiel to conduct an insurgency and to conduct a terrorist campaign than it does a conventional warfare campaign.
Okay.
So although the group's weaker than it was, if it marshals its resources carefully, they can continue this type of insurgent activity and this type of terrorist activity for some time to come, because it's less manpower intensive than conventional warfare.
Do we need to be concerned? I mean, you know, we talk about less weaker, but, you know, as with anything, when you corner a beast or an animal or anything, sometimes they become more violent. Is that something that we have to be concerned about?
Well, yeah, I think so. And I do think that these attacks in Nairobi are an indication of al-Shabaab actually being weaker. And let me explain why. Previously, when we looked at al-Shabaab, and it's important to understand that Somalia has been a basket case of a country, you know, going back into the 80s and 90s. You know, they've always had significant issues. Indeed, that's why the Americans were there initially on the humanitarian mission under the Clinton administration.
Right.
Because there was no governance, and there was nobody to really provide for the people. People were starving. And so we went there, you know, on a humanitarian. But anyways, it's been a basket case of a country, and a lot of Somali refugees have left the country. Of course, they've come to places like the United States and the UK and other places of Europe, but most of them, and many of them, have settled in Kenya. And so there are significant refugee camps in the border areas between Kenyans. Indeed, there are significant areas within Nairobi itself, like the Eastleigh neighborhood, where there are very big Somali contingents. And within this diaspora of Somalis in Kenya, there have always been links to al-Shabaab and to the radical Islamists. And, you know, they have used these connections within Kenya traditionally, you know, over the past many years as a source of funding, as a source of logistics, a way to help support their efforts within Somalia.
And this is where I heard the Kenyans are also now cracking down. I think they talked about maybe 200-something thousand Somalians in Kenya who may have these roots, but they're starting to clamp down. Do you think there will be some blowback on that?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
Really, the crackdown goes back to, as we talked about earlier, really the low-level attacks we saw in Nairobi mm-hmm. in 2012, and then the threats to attack Western hotels in 2012. This really caused the Kenyans to pick things up, to crank down on this Muslim youth center and organization, and also the businesses that were connected with Al-Shabaab. And I believe that the analytically, this crackdown has impacted the support and the logistics that were coming from Kenya, to the point where Godane, the Al-Shabaab leader, believed that he could that basically it was no longer an arrestor on his actions. I mean, previously we thought that analytically, because of the importance of Nairobi as a financial logistics hub, that Al-Shabaab would not risk a large-scale attack. But it seems that basically these actions against Al-Shabaab support networks have damaged the support networks to the point where, the calculus was now that it doesn't really matter. We're not getting enough support and money and stuff from Kenya. And so damaging those networks further, won't hurt us. So let's go ahead and attack inside Nairobi. And so you talk about the damaged animal lashing. That's what I believe we have here, is that, the networks in Kenya have been damaged. They're weaker than they were. And so it became a possibility now of these types of attacks in Kenya. And obviously, it's going to be a possibility going forward. They have these very big expatriate communities within Kenya, and Al-Shabaab has a lot of connections there. And quite frankly, when we look at the Westgate Mall attack, it was a simple attack.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't, basically acquiring the items necessary to build a large vehicle bomb and then constructing it. This was basically, guerrilla tactics using, AK-47s and grenades,
right.
the types of skills that all these guys have. So it really wasn't, using terrorist tradecraft, nothing really advanced there. This was just a simple armed assault against a soft target.
Right.
And because of that, and because of the resources and connections that Al-Shabaab has, it's not difficult to replicate this type of attack against other targets within Nairobi. And quite frankly, as you know well, in an open society, there are many, many, many soft targets. And,
right.
Even if you try to harden some of them, whether that's embassies or whether that's hotels or government buildings, you're always going to have other places that are going to be more vulnerable, especially to this type of attack. And so there is this concern, that Al-Shabaab can continue with simple attacks in Kenya. And certainly the Kenyans are well aware of this, as well as their, U.S. and British and Israeli allies. So they will be working very hard right now, working very hard to gather intelligence about this Al-Shabaab network within Kenya, and they will be trying to roll it up, as effectively as they can in order to prevent, the next attack.
Scott, when attacks like this happen, from your analysis, and you've been following this for many, many years, does this bolster support for the organization? I mean, is this, and does attack like this now say, okay, you guys have, of course they've already, so to say, have proven themselves as either an insurgent or a terrorist organization, but does it bolster in terms of, maybe people who want to be supporters? Does it increase their recruitment? Does it increase their funding for maybe certain people who, think they're doing the right thing? What have you seen?
Yeah, I think that, we have to remember that when we're talking about bolster, support, we have to look at the audiences involved. Now certainly within the Somali diaspora within Kenya, this is going to, the broader Somali diaspora, this is going to hurt Al-Shabaab's image,
mm-hmm.
Because they've alienated people by killing these innocents.
Right.
However, within the radical circles, their supporters with this Muslim Youth Center organization, those kind of guys are actually going to be emboldened and excited by this. Because when you look at it, you know, really we've had Godane and some of the other al-Shabaab leaders threatening the Kenyans since, you know, the Kenyans invaded 2 years ago. And these threats so far have been largely empty. And even when we've had the low-level attacks inside Kenya over the last couple years, you know, some of these grenade attacks against buses and churches and markets, al-Shabaab has you know, moonwalked, has distanced themselves from those attacks, you know, because of the concern about their support network in Kenya. Whereas this time, they have openly, you know, admitted to it and claimed responsibility. Indeed, Godane just issued, you know, a video yesterday, and they put an English transcript of that video on Twitter, on their Twitter feed. You know, so they are openly embracing this attack, and obviously they believe that that will help gain them support. I think that there's also the issue of the internal struggles that are going on within in al-Shabaab, and we haven't talked about that at all.
And you know what, Scott? As a matter of fact, I do want to talk about it because that leads us into a number of different, you know, we hear about some Americans have been over there supporting. And I think in recent, in the news, right before this happened, the news feed at least said that some Americans were killed or there have been some fractions in al-Shabaab and some people had, in terms of the internal organization, there may have been some deaths involved in terms of, you know, some people had left the organization that was going against it.
Yeah.
And want to talk about those things, maybe the fractions, and maybe talk about this American connection, Somalians in America, in Minnesota, and other places. Is that real? Is that an area of concern that we need to start thinking about? We're talking to Scott Stewart. He's vice president of analysis at Stratfor. Stratfor is a private intelligence firm. You can find them at stratfor.com. They do a great deal of great analysis on a number of world issues, and they definitely follow terrorism, insurgencies, cartels, and everything else that impacts a number of global 500 companies, government agencies, and everything else. We'll be right back after this break. We're talking about al-Shabaab, and we're going to continue this conversation about this organization and where they're going when we come back. You listen to Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we are having an intriguing and interesting and fascinating conversation about al-Shabaab, the organization, the terrorist organization, insurgency organization that basically went into this mall in Kenya and did these horrific acts recently for a number of different reasons. We're getting some background on this organization and finding about who they are and then what's their goals for the future. We're talking to Scott Stewart. He's a vice president of analysis at Stratfor. You can find him at stratfor.com. But they do a lot of intelligence gathering on a number of different world issues and risk issues that affect governments and affects global 500 companies and many other people, individuals as well. Scott also served in the State Department in the Bureau of Diplomatic Security. He was one of the investigators who was working a number of terrorist investigations and also worked around a number of different issues around the world. Scott, when we were talking before, we were talking about al-Shabaab, talking about the weakness, and now talking about maybe some fractions within the organization, some splits within the organization, and what's this American connection? And speak on that, Scott, and how is that impacting us?
Yeah, I will. You know, so you know, kind of continuing our narrative, you know, we have al-Shabaab weakened, you know, by this you know invasion 2 years ago that's wrested control of a lot of territory from them. And of course, when you have those kind of losses on the battlefield, or really in any organization, you know, when you take those kind of losses, even businesses, you know, people start looking at the leadership. You know, you see corporate CEOs, you know, under attack when their companies are losing money. And when an insurgent organization and you know, terrorist organization starts losing territory, of course, you know, many people will question the leadership of their emir or leader. And that's what happened within al-Shabaab. You know, as they started losing control of territory and then had to switch from, you know, this conventional type force into this insurgent and terrorist force, a lot of the, you know, people within the organization started questioning the leadership of this, you know, Ahmed Abdi Godane, the guy that they also known as, you know, Abu Zubair. And they started saying, you know, hey, you know, this guy's messed up. We need to remove him as the emir because, he's led us to ruin. And so we had different factions within the group. Some of them were even openly, criticizing Godane. One of those guys was this Ibrahim al-Afghani. He was another senior al-Shabaab faction leader. Well, because of the criticism, Godane had him executed. Another guy who was very openly and upset about Afghani's execution was this guy, Omar Hamimi. And he's the guy they call Abu Mansur al-Ameriki. He's basically an American citizen. He's the guy that was doing the bad rap videos.
Yeah. Exactly, right.
And he was from Alabama, brought up in Alabama. He lived some time up in Canada where he worked at a pizza shop. And then he ends up in Somalia where he's, there again, I think that sometimes we have a tendency to elevate guys, because they speak English.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're Americans, so he was really never much of a real, militant force. But because of the fact that he spoke English and could do bad rap videos, he got a lot of attention, by the international media and a lot of attention. Even within the organization, they kind of elevated him into, some sort of unit commander and spokesman. But Hamimi basically, was very critical of Godane. And Godane has been chasing him for many months now. And we had reports, in August that perhaps Godane's forces had, kidnapped Hamami's wives there in Somalia. And then it appears that we had seen previous reports of Hamami being killed. But it appears now, from some pretty good sources in Somalia, it seems like it's confirmed that he was assassinated in early September now.
In this dynamic, and the difference between a company where you may either be terminated in terms of, you still live with these organizations, if there's a split or a fraction or you start disagreeing with the leadership or whoever, then a lot of times they handle their situation by killing off each other.
That's right. Because, what it is Godane wanted to consolidate control. So you mm-hmm. had these different factions with these different sub-leaders, al-Afghani. You had guys like Hamami. And so they wanted to get, he wanted to kind of consolidate control, get rid of the dissension. And so he acted decisively. And a lot of people were calling this the Godane coup, that has happened this summer. But so basically we had al-Afghani killed. Hamami's out of the picture. We had another leader, this guy, Sheikh Awais, Hassan Dahir Awais. He's been an influential Islamist leader, really going, pre al-Shabaab days. He had his own organization there called Hizbul Islam. And, because of what happened, he also disagreed with Godane, but rather than be killed, he defected to the government, because he feared for his life. And so we had Awais kind of defect away with his fighters. And that's also, has weakened al-Shabaab some. Now, there's another, kind of major factional leader, this guy by the name of Sheikh Mukhtar Robo. It appears at this point that Robo has been kind of cowed into submission. And it seems that while he has disagreed with Godane in the past, it seems like, he's kind of scared and he's decided to kind of toe the line. And stay with Godane. He has not defected, and he's certainly not openly criticizing Godane anymore. But anyways, because of this internal dynamic and this need to assert control, Godane is also reportedly kind of a control freak,
mm-hmm.
and so he's kind of taken direct political, strategic, and even tactical control of al-Shabaab over from these subordinate leaders. And so he's kind of the one man running the show right now.
Is this new level of control? Does this mean, because we've seen a heavy amount of, you know, Twitter feeds. I mean, they're using social media. Mm-hmm. They're doing, is this all because of now this kind of new strategy to kind of, do these kind of attacks, these simple but very, very horrific attacks, then use also social media to now get, because they got a lot of major news plays, so that's what they wanted.
Yeah, well, they've been using, Al-Shabaab's been using social media for a long time.
Okay.
Even going back to the Hamami, rap videos on YouTube. And they've had the Twitter, feeds going on for a while. Indeed, Hamami was doing the Twitter feed for them for a while. But then after he got disaffected, we kind of had these Twitter wars going on between basically Godane's Al-Shabaab faction and Hamami. With these Twitter wars, which are actually almost kind of comical to watch, if they didn't end up so tragically with Hamami's death.
Right.
But anyways, they have been really using social media for a long time. It's been also interesting to watch as people have been trying to shut down the Al-Shabaab Twitter feed. It keeps coming up like a hydra with different little names and such. But so they seem very committed to using Twitter as a way to reach out. Not only to their supporters, but also to the media, because they understand that media, is a terror magnifier, and so they want to get their message out to the media, so that when something like this happens, their story gets out to the world.
Scott, we got to take a quick break. When I come back, I want to finish this conversation about Al-Shabaab. I want to also talk about your book, Shrewd as Shepherds and Innocent as Doves, A Practical Security Guide for Christian Travelers. This is Scott Stewart's book. It definitely focuses in on, for those who are doing traveling around the world, some practical tips of how to keep yourself safe. I want to talk about that before we have to close out the show. So I want to talk about Al-Shabaab when we come back, and maybe their future goals and recruitment in the United States, and also do we need to be concerned in the U.S. about something like this, and then let's swing into your travel security tips. We're talking to Scott Stewart. He is Vice President of Analysis at Stratfor. You can find him at stratfor.com, a private intelligence firm that focuses in on a number of different issues, but they definitely, as you can hear by this show, they definitely follow the issues of terrorism, things that are going on in Africa, things that are going on in Mexico and around the world. We'll be right back after this break. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about Al-Shabaab. They have been the terrorist organization who attacked this mall in Kenya, caused a number of different deaths of innocent people, been in the news quite a bit. We're getting some background on Al-Shabaab, and we're finding out who this organization is and then what can we expect from them in the future. We're talking to Scott Stewart. He's Vice President of Analysis at Stratfor. You can find him at stratfor.com, but they've been doing private intelligence work that provides government agencies as well as companies some great analysis on what's going on in the world that may impact them. Scott, in terms of Al-Shabaab for the future, what can we possibly anticipate? They, as you have talked about in this show, they've been around for a long time. They've been weakened. But what can we expect for the future? And also, what's the impact for America in terms of them recruiting young people from America? Are they trying to get attacks in the United States? I mean, where are they going?
As far as the end game, basically what we have is their number one goal right now is survival.
Mm-hmm.
They want to survive, this foreign intervention in Somalia. That's part of the insurgent, strategy. So basically they want to outlast the foreign troops, and then when the foreign troops withdraw, they want to try to surge back into power. At the same time, they want to cause pain to the foreign troops, not only in the way of attacks against them within Somalia, and certainly we've seen a number of attacks against foreign troops and even the United Nations within Somalia with the idea of trying to drive them out. So that's really their goal, and that's also part of what they're trying to do through the Nairobi attacks to cause Kenya enough pain that they will want to withdraw from Somalia. Now, as far as the U.S. question, certainly there are links there, especially to the Somali diaspora within the United States. And, sadly, there seems that there are certain, young men especially, who seem very receptive to this kind of, radical jihad message. And we have seen, a number of young men from the United States travel, to Somalia to fight, and several also, Europe and Canada, and we've seen several of them even, commit suicide as suicide bombers. And we've also seen reports that perhaps some of these Somali Americans were involved in this Nairobi attack. So this is a concern. To date, we have not really seen much traction for the kind of, lone wolf conduct attacks in the United States within this Somali diaspora.
Okay.
More what we've seen so far is let's go to Somalia and let's get the training and do our attacks there.
So the focus of the organization has not turned towards us, so to say, as like a prime Al-Qaeda or things like that. They're still very much focused in on their goals. Although we have been involved in Somalia, they're not as focused in on let's attack the United States. But maybe because we don't have troops there, we're not as involved. Is that the case?
Well, no. I mean, they probably would like to attack the United States, but quite frankly, they just don't have the means and the reach.
Okay.
It's difficult. And even a more transnationally focused organization like Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula in Yemen, they've even had problems doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we've seen these airline attacks and other things. But certainly there is a concern of, radicalized youth within, the United States conducting these types of attacks. And, we've had not only Al-Qaeda leaders, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula leaders and others calling for attacks in the West for many years. But we have seen, some of these misguided people attempt to, bomb Times Square. They've attempted to bomb the Federal Reserve Bank. They've attempted to, bomb sites in Chicago and other things. So occasionally, this message does resonate with certain misguided youth. And that's probably what we would expect from the Somali in the United States. I don't think that really the message is gaining all that much traction, personally. But frankly, it only takes, one or two or a handful of people to fall for the message to conduct an attack. So certainly, it is a concern within the United States. Also, I don't think Al-Shabaab, at least from my analytical perspective, has shown much in the way of a sophisticated terrorist tradecraft. And that's the tradecraft you really need to move beyond your comfort zone and your normal area of operations and conduct, terrorist operations in a hostile environment, like a New York or a Chicago or a London.
Right.
And so we really haven't seen Al-Shabaab showing that type of sophisticated terrorist tradecraft. Certainly, they have the insurgent tradecraft to carry out an armed assault against them all in Kenya.
Right.
But it's quite a different thing to build a vehicle bomb in New York.
Right. Let's hope that they don't start taking that path and then going down there. I know something we need to continue to monitor. Scott, we only got a couple minutes left. Talk us about your book. What in Travel Secure, what made you do this book? Give me a couple quick tips, especially for people who are traveling around the world and we want to keep them safe.
Yeah, great. In my day job at Stratfor, I do a lot of writing on travel security. We've put out some of our own blue books on travel security, and we write about it frequently on our website and to the emails we send to our subscribers. But I saw a real need for security for Christians in particular, because there's been this huge surge in short-term mission trips by American and Western Christians into the developing world.
Mm-hmm.
A generation ago, it was only a few intrepid missionaries that would travel to Africa. And at that time, it took weeks or even months to get there, when they were going out on ships and stuff like during the Great Awakening. But today, with modern, airlines and modern travel, the world's a smaller place. And so it's not unusual for, American missionary groups to go to places like Kenya, to go to places like Guatemala or Mexico, places even, in the, hard places, like Libya even. And so because of this increase in travel, I wanted to specifically write a book for Christian travelers. I also wanted it to kind of work to talk about, there are some people in the Christian community that believe that having a concern for your security shows a lack of faith. And as a Christian, I just don't believe that's true. I believe that there's many examples, and indeed I wrote a whole chapter in my book talking about a proper Christian perspective on personal security.
Right.
Trying to get rid of those myths and showing that it's actually biblical to have concern for your personal security as well as the security of people that you're traveling with and for your ministry.
We got so much to talk about. Let me give the title, Shrewd as Serpents and Innocent as Doves, a practical security guide for Christian travelers. You can find it on Amazon.com. As Scott Stewart's the author. He's put this book out. He has the expertise. He worked at the Bureau of Diplomatic Security, which their job is to basically keep Americans safe overseas, and their job is also to keep our State Department officials, our ambassador, Secretary of State, safe in the countries that they work in. So he knows a lot about this. He's also dealt with security for major companies like Dell, worked as a protective coordinator for Michael Dell during that time period. So he knows what he's talking about when it comes to travel security and knows what he's talking about when it comes to terrorism and also investigating. Scott, we've definitely got to keep this conversation going at another time. Thank you for being on Fed Access and providing us this background on Al-Shabaab.
Thank you, Derek.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.